You're listening to the Free Oromia podcast, dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. Thanks for tuning in to the Free Oromia podcast. Visit our website at freeoromia.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Team Free Oromia, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Team Free Oromia. You can also give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline at 430-755-0727 and leave us a voicemail asking us questions or giving us your feedback. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. I'm Jal Ango, and I'm joined by my usual brilliant, scintillating, fantastic, incomparable co-host, Jal Maro.
Hey. Wow, you really outdid yourself this time.
Yeah,
good to be back with you, Jal Ango, as usual.
Oh, thank you. You did a little thing last week, so I figured I'd have to like outperform you.
I see, you delivered.
The pressure was on. And today we are also joined by the unbelievably sensational, erudite, and magnificent Jal Lelo.
Wow, come to Denny Nagima.
Wow, wow, wow.
But yeah, case any.
Jal Lelo in house.
Apan Romo Maleha Soinaga, haye?
Haye.
I can see. Okay, Jal Lelo, you're setting the standard right now.
I'm trying. We have to practice. Thank you so much for having me. I love this podcast.
Jal Lelo, baganaga. Of course.
Galatomi baye Jal Maro. Pijalanko.
Maro baye nu gamachiste.
Galanike bilisuma. My brain is just blanking.
I was going to say Galanike bilisuma hato. Bilisuma Kenya hato.
Hato.
Amen. Hato. That's great. Like, literally, I can't. It's weird when I'm under pressure to speak Afan Oromo, nothing comes to mind. But
same, the same thing happens like to me.
Happening.
Mm-hmm. Me too. That's why I just have to try to stop pressuring myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And
take,
just blow
take the pressure off. Yeah.
Which is hard to do, but we gotta practice. Yeah.
You know, it's funny you say that, Jal Ango, because mm-hmm. I guess like I feel like for me, my general personality, I feel like I have those perfectionist tendencies, right? And I value Afan Oromo so much that I don't want to mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny, like talking to people as more recently I've been deliberately trying to improve like my vocabulary and my fluency to feel more comfortable speaking Afan Oromo, even though it was my first language technically. I don't feel confident really like expressing my thoughts and ideas fluently at a high level in Afan Oromo. And so I've been deliberately trying to improve it. And from talking to like people back home or people who, you know, grew up back home and came here, they literally say like, it's your language. You have the right to speak it, even if it's not perfect. And really there's no way to improve unless you practice and stumble a little bit and mess up, because if you just keep it all in your head until it's perfect, it's never going to be perfect. So I'm trying to consciously force myself to get a little uncomfortable and speak, even though I might, you know, phrase something incorrectly or struggle to find the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, one thing I know, if we are in Oromia, where we're constantly surrounded by Afan Oromo, it will be so easy to just pick up everything, the things that we're missing here. Like, I'm sure all of you can understand it, but speaking it is different. And so I just know that if Oromia is free and if we're back home, we will be able to just really exponentially increase our ability to speak. And I don't feel as bad about not being perfect, being raised in a Western country, being born and raised in a Western country. The fact that I can even understand it, I think I I think it's mm-hmm. a wonderful thing. At least we're not completely locked out of the language. But yes, we do have to practice it. And this kind of ties into our topic, which I'll let Jalango get to, but about Oromuma, because language is very important in terms of our identity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very true. I mean, I do feel a sense of guilt because, you know, afan biracha fadura hatiti afan oromo akagari tin batsifte jollu mani afan oromo likitin barade amma iranfachu tiyatuna gaddisisa.
Yeah, the only reason why I actually understand afan oromo is I have to give my deepest gratitude to my grandmother who was there when I was a child and taught me afan oromo growing up. So I learned afan oromo in English at the same time. But later on in life, when I went to school, my grandmother went back home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very hard to hold on to a language if you're not able to practice it on a daily basis. So mm-hmm. in this country, especially where I grew up, there just wasn't a lot of oromos. So I ended up going to school and like just being engaged with English a lot. And even if I heard afan oromo at home, which allowed me to hold on to the language, it wasn't enough. You need to be in a community and society and continuously practicing, especially to develop vocabulary, to be able to communicate like more complex concepts and not just the simple everyday, you know, language.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally feel you on that. I mean, so until I started primary or preschool when I was 3 years old, I barely knew English at home. There was like a rule that people had to speak to me in afan oromo. And they're like, when I look at my home videos from when I was about two, I was fluently speaking in afan oromo. But when like I had mm-hmm. someone that was trying to talk to me in English on the video, like I was like, number one, I had an accent. Number two, I like barely could answer the questions properly. Like it didn't make any sense in English. It was very mm-hmm. evident that it was not my primary language. But then when I started school, mm-hmm. when I was three, it was like, I was freaking out every day, like crying when my dad was dropping me off at school because I didn't know what they were talking about. So obviously as a kid, you learn languages very quickly. And at that point, mm-hmm. we kind of started speaking English at home so that I could learn English for school. And then that mm-hmm. kind of shifted things moving forward. Mm-hmm. As I got older, I was like, you know, I've lost a lot of my afan oromo. And in high school, I started trying to like learn afan oromo deliberately. And that's kind of what started that process of me trying to go back and build on that. So,
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the bottom line at this point. It's as adults, it's our own responsibility to pick up the slack and utilize the resources that we have to improve our own language capacity. And obviously, that's more easily said than done, but there's no shortcuts, so to speak. You know, it kind of just has to get done. But yes, as Jalelo mentioned, it is very fitting that this episode has started with this sort of impromptu conversation around afan oromo, because our episode today is about oromuma, and specifically about theorizing oromuma. The concept of oromuma is used widely, but we want to delve a little bit further into what it actually means. So when we're talking about theorizing oromuma, it's the idea of oromuma as a social theory, or as an oromo movement theory. Now, before I started reading up on this, I didn't even know what a social theory was. So this was definitely something quite challenging for me to wrap my head around as a natural scientist rather than a social scientist. But once I kind of got a grip on the idea of social theories, which refers to frameworks that are built around the ideas, arguments, hypotheses and explanatory speculations about how and why human societies or elements or structures of such societies come to be formed, change, and develop over time or disappear. So once I'd sort of vaguely come to understand what a social theory is to begin with, I was able to wrap my head a little bit more around the idea of theorizing Oromumma. And this concept of theorizing Oromumma actually comes from one of our leading social scientists from the Oromo Nation, and that is Professor Asafa Jalata. And he wrote a paper on theorizing Oromumma, and he describes it as being necessary to transform our thinking in Oromo politics and studies, and to theoretically, critically, and practically understand all aspects of Oromumma as it being an essential tool for transforming the Oromo National Movement for Liberation and egalitarian democracy. So the theory of Oromumma embraces the principles of human freedom, social justice, equality, equity, national self-determination, and again, egalitarian democracy. So, ladies, how do you define Oromumma?
I think Oromumma essentially is an ideology, and at its core, it's about promoting the Oromo national interest, which includes promoting the political and material and cultural interest of the Oromo people. And I think its ultimate driver at this moment, because of the predicament that we're in, is that it's a quest for freedom in social justice and the principles that you mentioned earlier, equality, political and economic self-determination, and ultimately egalitarian democracy. And it is the ideology through which the current Oromo National Movement for Liberation is being waged. So that's sort of like a surface level understanding to me of Oromumma. And I think you could break it down further, right? So I'm talking about Oromumma at the national level. There's Oromumma at the individual level too. And then there's levels of Oromumma, which I think we'll get into later because of the reading that we did on theorizing Oromumma by Professor Asafa Jalata. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at a surface level, I think it's important for people to understand that it is, it embraces sort of pushing forward and advancing the Oromo national interest.
John Lelo, I think that's a really good definition. I like that a lot. And by the way, I have a feeling some of our listeners are going to say, like, wait, was that John Maro or John Lelo? Because... anyway, this is John Morrow speaking now. I think I like how you differentiated the individual versus the collective national Oromumma. And also, like you said, when we get further into this publication by Professor Asafa Jalata and the five levels, I think that goes more into, okay, well, what's the difference between the basic Oromumma and, you know, the higher levels and the implications and the implementation of it? Jalango, when you asked how we define Oromumma, my first thought was at the individual level and kind of the more basic sense of what it means. And how I would define Oromumma is the quality of being Oromo and reflecting and living the shared values, culture, and desires of the Oromo Nation. So yeah, there are obviously levels to it. And I think we're going to get into that more, like the different concepts that branch off of it and what that means. But this definition is how I would define the core of what Oromumma is, particularly as an individual.
If I could add also, I think there's another way you can look at it. So, well, first let me just say, historically speaking, if you look at the 1960s when Majatuloma was forming, and then later on when the Oromo liberation was forming, those are the moments in our history where there was the sort of really heightened development of national level Oromoma. Mm-hmm. To explain more about Macha Tuluma, that organization was formed essentially to advance the social and economic needs of a very impoverished and oppressed Oromo Nation at that time. And if you look at the leaders in both of these organizations, they basically transformed the consciousness of the Oromo people. And they infused Oromuma into our society in order to reject forced assimilation and Ethiopianism and Ethiopian colonialism. Mm-hmm. So that's another framework you can look at Oromuma, which is that it is not just about advancing our interests as a people, but mm-hmm. also it's in the context in which our peoplehood was being diminished and our history was being distorted. Mm-hmm. And it's a rejection of Ethiopian colonialism. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so when we are talking about, you know, people talk about how Afan Oromo was banned until 1991, right? Mm-hmm. That is our Oromuma being suppressed and suffocated. Or when our institutions are banned, when Macha Tuluma was banned, when OLF was banned and criminalized, mm-hmm. historically and present day. And then when we look at the education system in Ethiopia, how it silences the telling of our history and it distorts our history, and then we look at how we are persecuted, our people are persecuted, are imprisoned and murdered, our civilians are murdered just for simply being Oromo or identifying as Oromo, being proud to be Oromo. All of this is about squashing and demonizing and destroying Oromuma, mm-hmm. essentially. And I think that's a very important lens to look at this ideology or theory, mm-hmm. because sometimes I think people don't look at this framework or what has happened to us as a people through this lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an extremely important consideration, Jal Lello. And this concept of theorizing Oromuma was developed through that lens, essentially, and theorized Oromuma as a sort of framework to help combat the context that we find ourselves in, and sort of what the different levels that you guys have mentioned the theory split up into do, and what role they play in counteracting the conditions of that context. So the theory conceptualizes Oromuma on 5 levels. And to give an idea of what those levels are, and these are just very condensed definitions of those 5 levels. Number 1, practicing aspects of Oromo indigenous ancestral lineage. So for example, speaking the language, practicing the culture, having the belief systems and values of Oromo people, and practicing the customs and traditions of Oromo people. The second level is adopting and developing Oromo nationalist ideology and engaging in the struggle for national self-determination. And this would involve basic sacrifices such as joining Oromo associations and organizations, and spending time, energy, or money to promote the Oromo national cause. And at the highest level of sacrifice, within level 2, that would involve dying or being ready to die for the national cause. The third level is possessing a repertoire of knowledge and values that are prerequisites for building Oromo national leadership and organizational capacity. And the fourth level encompasses a national project that establishes an Oromo ethos that mobilizes the nation to build the national culture, history, political economy, and sovereignty that form the emblems of the Oromo nation. And on that fourth level of Oromuma, it deals with knowing about the Oromo past and the current conditions in order to develop policies and practices that can advance the Oromo national culture, ideology, and action. And then on the fifth and final level, it's about this concept of global Oromuma, which is expanding the principles of freedom, justice for all, national self-determination, and egalitarian democracy beyond the Oromo Nation. So what's your perspective on the different levels of Oromumba that have been conceptualized within this theory?
I think it's an important theoretical exercise so that we can all self-evaluate and self-assess what we are doing and what more we can do, like how more we can develop our Oromumba, breaking down what Oromumba is and what the levels are allows us to like assess, okay, where am I and how can I improve? And so I think it provides a lot of clarity to me, especially on a personal level. And I think for people who read and study Oromumba as a theory, it'll provide a lot of clarity, ideological clarity.
Yeah, I agree. This was an interesting concept to me because I think even on our podcast in the past, we've talked about what does it mean to be Oromo even, right? And I think like at a very, very basic fundamental level, we kind of just, Oromumba is kind of just synonymous with being Oromo. And even I remember on our Instagram, we had put out a poll like, or some kind of, you know, Q&A with our listeners about what does it mean to be Oromo? If this person goes against everything that is in the interest of the Oromo people, is this person Oromo? You know what I mean? And we had completely different responses to that. And so seeing this framework and this theorization of Oromumba, it really forced me to think about the concept in a different way. The five levels of Oromumba to me felt very much like a natural step ladder towards almost kind of like self-actualization as an Oromo. You know what I mean? So like, okay, we're all on this basic level, like that first step of the basic form of Oromumba, which is every Oromo if they're not fully assimilated into another culture, right? So we're all there. And then some people are on that next step. And then, you know, ideally we're all climbing our way up to that point where the Oromo principles and culture and values are spreading beyond us because, you know, we're just at that point where the world can appreciate what Oromo stands for and our history and our culture. And you know what I mean? So I feel like the way that it was laid out in those five levels really helped me to think about the concept of Oromumba in a different way. And like, there are levels to it, to put it simply.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to encounter this idea of sort of standardizing an identity and how that can actually help to promote and drive or, you know, sort of steer and direct the interests of that nation that that identity belongs to. So that was really interesting to me. But I kind of, as I was reading through the levels and, you know, understanding them and what they encompassed, what occurred to me was that I don't know if I necessarily agree with these levels being in a sort of progressive hierarchy. I think at least for some of the levels, they sort of exist on almost like a lateral plane. And the reason why I say that is because I think it can be observed among many Oromo people today, especially Oromo youth in the diaspora, for example, that their extent of national political consciousness, so level two, is through the roof. But this person doesn't speak a word of Afaan Oromo or has almost no awareness of Oromo culture and traditions. And then on the other hand, there are those whose first category of Oromumba or basic Oromumba is essentially complete in terms of their knowledge of Oromo cultural identity. But they have zero sense of national political consciousness, and they would even go as far as oppressing Oromo people themselves. You know, so I kind of wonder how much these levels are organized in a strict hierarchy And whether maybe some of these levels sort of exist on more of a lateral plane, and you can have, you know, certain levels of fullness, so to speak, within each category.
I hear that. But the thing I would counter is that I think that the first level, the theory and also in practice, when we look at Oromos today, it's about exercising aspects of Oromo-ness, whether it's language, culture, mm-hmm. or our belief systems or values. It's, I don't think necessarily like you have to be completely fluent in Afan Oromo to say that you have fulfilled level one. I don't believe mm-hmm. that. I do think it's about not being fully assimilated into another culture, being able to hold on to your Oromo-ness in some aspects. And I do think that level two is the next step up in expressing Oromo-ma. But one thing mm-hmm. I want to say that Ja Maro said earlier, which I think is really interesting, is that this theory, I think it really clarifies the difference between being Oromo versus having Oromo-ma and expressing mm-hmm. Oromo-ma. I think that's mm-hmm. one of the biggest debates you see in sort of out in society is like, some people argue, okay, like my Oromo identity, like no one has a right to tell me if I'm Oromo or not, right? And we even see, mm-hmm. you know, out in the political space where people are arguing about, is Prime Minister Abiy Oromo or not? I think mm-hmm. that debate is based off of a lack of knowledge of understanding what Oromuma is, because mm-hmm. they're not the same thing.
That's a and good point.
To think that they're the same thing is a common misunderstanding that I think mm-hmm. like education can resolve. So I think anyone can claim they are Oromo, right? Anyone, mm-hmm. based off of mm-hmm. who you claim your family to be. But you cannot mm-hmm. claim that you are exercising Oromuma if, like I said before, you don't have sort of the knowledge, the values, and the principles, and then you're not also acting upon using that knowledge in the interest of the Oromo national movement or struggle. And so I think that this theory really sets mm-hmm. in stone that distinction. And I think we have to, like, as a society, not mistake people who identify as Oromo with people who are acting in the interest of the Oromo, meaning they are possessing Oromuma or exercising Oromuma.
Ja Lelo, that's a really good distinction between being Oromo and having and or practicing Oromuma. I appreciate that. Ja Lango, to your point, I think I see what you're saying. And one thing that I noticed in this particular theorization is that there are not like distinct check boxes, right? It's not like, okay, here is exactly what it means to have basic Oromuma and move on to the next level. It's a little bit fluid. And if I can actually just pull from the article itself, quoting here, at the first level, having a basic form of Oromuma means to manifest Oromo-ness by practicing some aspects of Oromo culture, language, belief systems, values, norms, customs, and traditions. And, you know, that framing leaves it open because mm-hmm. the reality is that people have completely varying levels of this, right? So it's a construct. It's not, mm-hmm. Okay, you know, you have this many points, you have Oromuma, move to level two. It's not really like that. It's kind of just like this general idea. And I think it looks different for every person. Like there may be some person that's an expert on, you know, Oromo values and norms and not know two words of Afan Oromo possibly. And vice versa. Somebody could be completely fluent in Afan Oromo. They speak Afan Oromo like that's their main and only language, but they could not care less about Oromo cultures or values. And so I think we do have to take those things into consideration. And like you were mentioning about youth that may be, you know, diehard Sabonuma, you know, and really be involved deeply and care deeply, but they don't know Afan Oromo, you know, I would argue that they do practice many aspects of Oromo culture, and values, and that's what's bringing them to their high level of activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I guess what I'm kind of taking away from this is that you agree that it's a hierarchical structure, but that it isn't a case of, you know, a set of steps within each level that you have to ascend in order to be able to make it to the next level.
I think another way I look at this theory is that, like, stepping away from the levels for a second, the simplistic distillation of this ideology to me is that there are two components. There is your level of knowledge, and that knowledge is building. It's not static. It's continuously building.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowledge includes, you know, knowledge of the lived experiences of the Oromo people, of our history, of our culture. Mm-hmm. It includes our language, our knowledge of our values and our practices and our indigenous systems and our worldviews. That knowledge base is continuously building. But it has to include, mm-hmm. to me, like, in order to move on in the levels, it has to then turn into the extent of action that you're taking based off of that knowledge that is increasingly building. Does that make sense? So, like, mm-hmm. I don't think anyone who has figured out the aspects of their Oromo-ness through level one has completed that. You know, I think our history is so long. It's not just our modern history, in which understanding what the independent Oromo nation was before Ethiopian imperialism, that's not the extent of our history. We have ancient history too. And so I think that level is, it's just like infinity. Like, you'll increasingly build upon it, but you cannot, I think, be on the level too of taking action and sort of paying sacrifices to advance the Oromo national interest if you don't have some basic level of knowledge, you know, mm-hmm. of our history and of why we are even in the situation that we're in now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think at least in the way that it's laid out in this framework, the first level is very basic. I don't even think, you know, it necessarily implies that that person has, you know, any kind of like deep understanding of history or anything. It sounds like that probably fits more into like level three.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's, again, it's all fluid, but, you know, as far as like that basic foundation, like, mm-hmm. to simplify it a little bit, it's stated that everyone has this, every Oromo has this, unless they have been assimilated into another culture. So I think if we just think about it in that very basic sense, it's kind of just simply like that basic prerequisite, I guess. But I don't think it necessarily mm-hmm. implies a mastery of Oromo language, Oromo cultural practices, or being an expert on those things. It's just that basic sense that mm-hmm. we have passed down to us.
Mm-hmm.
If you were simply raised in an Oromo household or anything like that.
Right, right. But then that basic sense could literally be as fundamental as just knowing oneself to be Oromo. Because I guess a person can be considered having been entirely assimilated into another culture if they have no knowledge of their Oromuma, so to speak, other than the fact that they are Oromo. But someone at that level could still have a sense of Oromo national consciousness. So,
for sure.
So, you know, that fundamental level is basically,
it's a spectrum.
It starts with knowing your Oromo. And as you know, if you recognize yourself as Oromo, then you have potentially the foundations for progressing into level two, so to speak.
Yes.
And the rest of level one can come after that, kind of thing.
I think there's a whole range of people in level one, basically. You know, you could be born in America, don't speak a fine Oromo, you're proud to be Oromo, and you are learning about your Oromo-ness by reading. You could be born in Oromia, speak a fine Oromo fluently, and you could still be this is the level of Oromuma that you're expressing by just simply being born into an Oromo family and identifying as Oromo and learning about your Oromo-ness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's level one.
That's level one. So on level two, actually, which, just to reiterate, is adopting and developing Oromo nationalist ideology and engaging in struggle for national self-determination. There's a concept that's described in the paper in regards to being able to develop an Oromo nationalist ideology, and that it's contingent on this idea of cognitive liberation. And cognitive liberation is a concept within another theory, which is called political process theory. And it's described by the sociologist Professor Doug McAdam, who is a pioneer of the political process theory, as a necessary condition for social movements to challenge the established political system. And there are three dimensions of cognitive liberation. One is recognition of the illegitimacy of the established system. Two is the capacity to overcome fatalism, which is the belief that all events are predetermined and therefore inevitable, or having a submissive attitude towards events resulting from a fatalistic attitude. So the capacity to overcome fatalism among the population in order to believe in changing a social system. And thirdly, the ability to believe that introducing social change is possible. So what role do you guys think cognitive liberation plays in the Oromo struggle, and particularly in the capacity to develop and adopt an Oromo nationalist ideology?
Well, that's a very dense and academic question, Jalango.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. I think essentially what this spectrum of Oromuma is building cognitive liberation of the mind, because mm-hmm. I think historically the colonization of the Oromo people, it wasn't just about taking our land and resources. It was also about colonizing our minds and mm-hmm. changing sort of our understanding of who we are and forcing mm-hmm. assimilation so that we don't resist. And mm-hmm. I think Oromuma essentially, the spectrum of Oromuma and evolving and growing your Oromuma, especially reaching level two, which is when you're really starting to develop the national ideology. You're moving from the individual level of Oromuma, level one, to mm-hmm. More national level Oromuma, and mm-hmm. you're starting to pay sacrifices. There's different levels of mm-hmm. of sacrifices. And one thing I wanted to know earlier that I forgot to is I think there's probably even a space between level one and level two where you mm-hmm. have, you're developing basic forms of Oromo-ness, but then maybe there's a 1.5 when you're becoming aware of the Oromo condition and the fact that our peoples mm-hmm. Need to be liberated, like physically liberated, mm-hmm. but cognitively liberated too. And I think mm-hmm. that's when you move to taking action, that's level two.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, you know, this idea of cognitive liberation is very pertinent to the Oromo struggle, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when we talk about Ababiyuma, Hatabiyuma, and self-determination. And I wanted to just bring up this quote from McAdam. So McAdam argues that before collective action can get underway, people must collectively define their situations as unjust and subject to change through group action. So before Oromo people can actually come together and force a change in the system and change their situation and liberate themselves practically, we have to internally, cognitively, in our minds, liberate ourselves and truly believe that what is happening to us is fundamentally wrong and we can actually impact a change. Like, we are the owners of the land mm-hmm. that we are on, and we mm-hmm. are going to seek justice. We're going to, be able to determine our future for ourselves. So before we can actually mm-hmm. achieve self-determination, we have to believe that we deserve self-determination and that we are capable of achieving self-determination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's kind of like that. If you think about a self-fulfilling prophecy in a sense, right? Like, in order to actually do something, you kind of have mm-hmm. to believe that you can do it. In order to be free, you mm-hmm. have to mm-hmm. believe that you deserve to be free, and you can make yourself free. You can free yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. so interesting mm-hmm. that this like idea of cognitive liberation, it's basically saying that, it's what's happening in your mind that has to change first before mm-hmm. any practical changes can happen in your society or your community. And I wanted to pull a quote from the reading about this issue. I referenced it earlier, but this is from Frantz Fanon, and he mm-hmm. is a renowned sociologist and psychologist. And so he said that, basically, quote, "The colonizers have never been content with occupying the land of indigenous peoples and expropriating their labor and other resources. They have also declared mm-hmm. war on the psyches of the oppressed." And I think mm-hmm. that really falls in line with your question of this idea of cognitive liberation. And it also falls in line with the theory, because the theory is demonstrating that it's the liberation of our own minds that is necessary first, and then we can start to work on expanding that to liberating our people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, specifically in the context of the Oromo nationalist ideology and getting to a place where that becomes the ideology that the Oromo individual adopts, I think the biggest hurdle to overcome within these steps of achieving cognitive liberation would be the recognition of the illegitimacy of the established system. And within the Theorizing Oromuma paper, Ethiopianism is described as ideological hegemony. And it's an internalization by the dominated group of the ideological structure of the dominating group as the natural order. And that would have to be dismantled to overcome, the political passivity and fatalism within the dominated group. So, as Oromo people, this struggle to dismantle the ideology of Ethiopianism is something that we're still engaged in to this day. It's a really sort of huge task. Because as explained by Professor Asafa, oppressive and colonial institutions and organizations produce false or biased knowledge and theories and narratives in order to naturalize and justify all forms of inequality and injustice. So the Oromo National Movement, which is a progressive and a revolutionary movement, is more or less the struggle to expose and discredit such knowledge by producing alternative narratives, alternative theories, alternative knowledge, and alternative worldviews. So I think that's what essentially underpins level two, which is the development of Oromo nationalist ideology.
And another way of putting it is that I think it's about reclaiming our authentic and true history. and rejecting distortions and sort of equipping our people to be able to do that. And I think I mentioned this earlier, but the 1960s is really when this level two of national Oromuma was really, you know, exponentially growing with the formation of certain institutions, such as the Majra Tulama Association and the Oromo Liberation Front. And for that reason, the leaders of these institutions were targeted and murdered, imprisoned, eliminated. And in a way, like, you know, those sacrifices that they paid, it was because they were trying to sort of empower the Oromo people to get to this level of expressing Oromuma so that they can eventually liberate themselves. And speaking of sacrifices, I do think that there are different levels of sacrifices that one can pay. And you referenced this earlier, Jalango, where you could be joining organizations or, you know, donating to issues. But also, I think the ultimate sacrifice is giving one's life and or just sort of committing one's life to the struggle. And if I'm thinking about our liberation fighters, I'm thinking about people who have been in prison, political prisoners. I'm thinking about the leaders that we've lost along the way, who started Majra Tulama and OLF, and also who, you know, they weren't part of the founding members, but they were part of it, growing these organizations to the point now that they are national institutions, even though they are being targeted and banned. Even to this day, Majra Tulama, the chairman of Majra Tulama, was actually imprisoned during this current phase under the PP regime. He was imprisoned, Obu Diribi. Even to this day, our institutions are being targeted, and ultimately it's about suppressing the growth of Oromuma.
Yeah, absolutely. So then at level three, which is possessing a repertoire of knowledge and values that are prerequisites for building Oromo national leadership and organizational capacity, what do you think that repertoire of knowledge would need to be composed of in order to be able to build Oromo national leadership and organize on a national level?
I think there's so many components to this. I think first, there's substantive knowledge of the condition of the Oromo people historically, present day, and sort of having a vision for moving forward. And that takes time to develop that knowledge. And then there is the more, I wouldn't call it procedural, but just like, how do you actually mobilize people and effectively lead and build institutions and organizations? Those skills are also equally important and necessary. You know, how do you bring people together who have experienced for over a century the divide and conquer tactics of the Ethiopian Empire when it comes to Amanti or where you're from, you know, or any other characteristic? You know, we have been intentionally divided. So someone who's at this level has, you know, has to have a range of knowledge and skills, I think, to be able to overcome those obstacles and to be able to effectively bring people together in organizations and to build leadership, to be an effective leader and to also build leaders.
I agree with that completely, Jal Lello. It was addressed in the paper as well, that this has been actively counteracted by the Ethiopian Empire and, you know, successive Ethiopian regime through the underdevelopment of Oromo human capabilities. And, you know, this has been through the denial of a formal education for Oromo people and in Oromo society, which has led to the underdevelopment of their leadership and organizational capacities, of our leadership and organizational capacities, which would be the sort of primary instruments that we need to tackle the problems that we face as a nation in Oromia. So, you know, forcing us into a state of powerlessness and, you know, a certain level of ignorance and also poverty has been, you know, a deliberately constructed approach of the Ethiopian colonial state. So, you know, we've kind of been handicapped in our capacity to develop our Oromuma on that third level. And a lot of Oromo intellectuals went into exile to escape from that sort of hindrance and oppression, and to be able to have more freedom to develop these skills and the knowledge that is required to be able to organize on a national level. But then that has disconnected them from the nation. It's disconnected them from the community back home. So, you know, actually implementing that knowledge and implementing those skills from so far away has then become another hurdle to have to overcome and to be able to fulfill the elements of that third level of Oromuma.
Those are really good points, Jalango and Jalelo. I think my main takeaway from level three was you're going from that basic Oromuma, right? You've gone to the next level where you are, you're being involved, right? Like, so you have some level of involvement in Kabso, regardless of, you know, what level of involvement that is, you're involved in, to some extent, in the Oromo cause. The next step is kind of like, as it's stated in this paper, building the Oromo knowledge bank, right? So you're not yet building the nation, but you're understanding things on a deeper level to prepare for the building phase, right? So, you know, in terms of building that knowledge bank, I think of institutions like the Oromo Studies Association, which that's kind of the core of what OSA is about, right? Is about harvesting that knowledge and institutionalizing it. And it's literally that knowledge bank that this paper describes. So that's what I immediately thought of in that. As far as Jalango, I think when you first asked us, you were asking about like the specific knowledge and values, right? You asked us about specific knowledge and values that we need in our repertoire. I don't know that there's a specific list. I almost feel like that's up to us to determine that. It's up to us to develop that knowledge bank. I mean, it's all things that are related back to, again, in the paper, it says the Oromo cultural capital. So it's kind of up to us to really study our history, our culture, our indigenous knowledge that has been passed down through generations, and really bring to the forefront for ourselves and for the rest of our people what that entails. What is the knowledge we need in order to start building Oromia?
Jamara, I completely agree. I think the Oromo Studies Association, or OSA, is a exceptional example of an institution full of people who have sort of dedicated themselves to building Oromo studies and Oromo knowledge. And I think that is incredibly important given the context in which Oromo studies in Ethiopia has not been allowed to freely flourish. And in fact, our history has been completely distorted. And the education system also you know, you don't, if you are an Oromo, you do not learn about your history in Ethiopia mm-hmm. and in Oromia. Mm-hmm. So I think that mm-hmm. OSA is just, it's an amazing institution. At the same time, it exists outside of the country, right? It exists in the West. So the diaspora can heavily benefit and it can help the diaspora build its own knowledge and understanding of the Oromo condition to be able to mobilize and organize itself as mm-hmm. an entity. The thing mm-hmm. that is, you know, really, it's a reality we have to admit, which is that we have not been able to build our own knowledge base mm-hmm. and to support mm-hmm. our scholars to the point that we can in Oromia. And that is the reality that we live in. And that is essentially, again, like I think we keep coming back to this pattern that the system, the Ethiopian colonial system, this is intentional to sort of suffocate the development of the evolution of Oromuma, mm-hmm. of allowing it to build and become institutional and not just on an individual basis and not just on, you know, the idea in people's minds of having an Oromo nation, but preventing mm-hmm. Us from building institutions in which we can pass on this knowledge generation to generation. Mm-hmm. So every generation Absolutely. Has to have a reawakening because we do not have freely functioning institutions within the country.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's such a powerful point. Yeah. Every generation has to have a new reawakening because we don't have those institutions to carry that knowledge forward. Wow. Goodness me.
Yeah, it's something tough to reckon with, but a very good mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in terms of that, every generation having to have a sort of a new reawakening, part of being able to build successful leadership and, you know, being able to organize successfully is understanding where your base is at, you know, in terms of their own level of understanding and in terms of their psychology. This is also addressed in the paper, the idea of understanding Oromo psychology and what Oromo people think about their national struggle. And, you know, I think it's necessary to have a good grasp of that in order to be able to tailor the leadership in a way that it actually speaks to the people and galvanizes the people. You know, in an appropriate way. And actually reading that, it reminded me of work that's being done in that lane and someone who we've actually had as a guest on our previous episode on Tokuma, Jal Beka. If you guys remember, his work was on researching how Oromo people relate to their identity and how they relate to their national struggle. You know, so it's good to know that there is work underway to establish where the psychology of the current Oromo generation is at. All right, so at the fourth level, we come on to Oromuma as a national project. And that project is described as establishing an Oromo ethos, mobilizing the nation to build the national culture, history, political economy, and the sovereignty that signify the emblems of the Oromo nation. And on that fourth level of Oromuma, as I mentioned earlier, it deals with knowing about the Oromo past and the current conditions in order to develop policies and practices that can advance the Oromo national culture ideology and translate that into action.
Yeah, I feel like, Jal Ango, this level four kind of like really is a direct build on to level three. And even in the paper, it says, Oromo nationalists not only need to know about the Oromo past and the current conditions, which I would dub as level three. Level three is knowing about the Oromo past and current conditions and having that understanding and awareness, right? So we don't only need to know that. We also need to develop the policies that will help developing Oromo national culture, ideology, and action. And to me, that goes from the understanding and preparing phase to the practically building and mobilizing, doing, and putting that theory from level three into practice. So that's kind of how I interpreted level four.
Yeah, I think level four is essentially about saying that Oromo is not about only about looking back, and it's about looking forward to and reimagining what we can be, and reimagining a return to our previous existence of sovereignty and independence, and having self-determination and having basic human rights and living freely. And it's about, you know, moving forward and looking forward to that. And like I said, reimagining a different existence. And I think there is action implemented through the other levels. But this action, I think, is definitely a different form of action. It's like, how can we actually build a system and its policies and a governance system that incorporates our values and our indigenous values and principles that we've had for centuries, but also advances and adapts to the present reality that we live in and the sort of economic reality we live in and the world that we live in. So I think it's a very enormous project. I can think of, you know, some examples of steps being taken right now to move in this direction, but it's going to take a lot more work, I think.
Definitely. And would you say this is the level where the concept of Oromo graduates from the sort of personal level to the collective level, you know, where now it's beyond the individual, and where those who express their Oromo in this way have to move and work as a collective?
No, actually, I think that's level two. I think level
two. You think that's level two?
Yeah, I think level two is, I think level two is when you're moving from the individual to the collective and national, like working in the national interest.
I would say, yes, it could be level two, but in another way of looking at it, I think there are individual and collective aspects in all of these levels. But
I agree with that. Yeah.
Like even in level one, you can look at that through the lens of an individual or the lens of the nation and the collective Oromo, right? But yeah, I would say in level two, you start, it's not just about, you know, you and what's in your mind. It's about what you're doing. And that inherently, as Jadlelo said, involves working towards something collective for the nation. So I don't, yeah, I agree. I don't think it's individual until level four.
Yeah, basically, I agree. I think that there is a collective component of level two, three, and four. But I think that that first transition of really thinking about the Oromo national interest and acting upon it is from level one to level two, like that transition.
And then finally at level five, we come to the concept of global Oromo, which is expanding principles of freedom, justice for all, national self-determination, and egalitarian democracy beyond the Oromo nation. So, you know, level five is that stage where we've realized Oromo in its entirety in Oromia, and then now we're able to export those inherent values to beyond the borders of our own nation.
Yeah, I think this is my favorite level because I think that essentially like the core principles of Oromuma, which is advancing self-determination for peoples and advancing egalitarian democracy and justice and freedom. Clearly, these are principles that international law and various countries around the world claim that they also hold, right? And I think I think it's so fascinating, and I wish that there would be more scholarly studies on this, which is that our Oromo indigenous values are essentially principles that different entities around the world are already claiming to try to advance towards. And I think it shows yeah. that it's important for us to develop and evolve our Oromuma, but it's also, it's not just about us. It's about ensuring that people can live freely everywhere. And so I guess that's why it's called global Oromuma. But I think it shows that while we want to build ourselves, we also want everyone around us, our neighbors, to be living freely, to be living democratically. Because essentially that is, I think, the best form of governance and form of self-governance, and the best system for people to live peacefully.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that in a free Oromia, when these values are not only just historical values and they're actually in practice, I honestly think that level 5 is something that will naturally occur, simply because those Oromo values, you know, if we're actually able to enforce that in our day-to-day life and live by those values, I think that will just be something that those Oromo ideals will naturally reverberate beyond Oromia. Not by some deliberate imposing it on others, not through colonization, not through, you know, forcing others to assimilate to Oromo culture, but just simply because at the core, these Oromo values and ideals are about democracy, equality, so on and so forth. And, you know, it's kind of amazing that we have that in our history, something that the majority of the world is trying to achieve today. So I do think that it's really nice to see that here within these levels, and have that as something that we can strive towards in the future.
Yeah, Gianmaro, I totally agree, and I see that. I think it really shows that the Oromo struggle for democracy and freedom, it fits into this world struggle now that's happening between democracy and authoritarianism. And I do think, unfortunately, at this moment, we're seeing worldwide a demise in the advancement of democracy. And so I think ultimately what the Oromo struggle is, it fits into this struggle for peoples to be able to self-govern themselves peacefully and democratically. And essentially that is what this fifth level of Oromuma is, which is why it's my favorite level. It is joining this world fight against authoritarianism. And we know in Ethiopia right now, what we're seeing with the different crises in Oromia, the wars in Oromia and Walaka, Borana, Guji, Wallo. And then we're also seeing the war in Tigray. We're seeing just absolute chaos. I mean, our struggle and the development of Oromuma is a struggle against this sort of system of violence and authoritarianism, locally, regionally, and globally.
Absolutely. And it's so true what you're saying about Oromuma being a part of this global struggle against authoritarianism. And, you know, it was recognized from the inception of the Ethiopian Empire that Oromuma is inherently in opposition to authoritarian rule. And there's a quote from an Amnesty report in 2014 that's in the paper that says, expressions of Oromo culture and heritage have been interpreted as manifestations of dissent in Ethiopia, that is. So the fact that expressions of Oromuma is interpreted as manifestations of dissent against an authoritarian system just shows inherently how the Ethiopian state has always recognized that expression of Oromuma and Oromuma as a concept is antithetical to the foundational structure of the Ethiopian Empire. And there's a quote from Bonnie Holcomb's book that was published in 2002 that says, the essence of colonization was the replacement of the values of Oromuma as the overarching integrating mechanism of the Oromo superstructure and replacing it with the ideology and the resulting institutions of Ethiopia. So there has always been this recognition of Oromuma as being the underpinning philosophy that justifies the right to national self-determination for Oromo people, and that will always exist as a counter ideology to the oppressive and colonial ideology of the Ethiopian Empire and the Ethiopian state. So, you know, global Oromuma, when that manifests, that will be the ultimate revenge against Ethiopian colonialism, for those beautiful values to be exported beyond our own nation and for other people to be able to live and enjoy real freedom and peace and democracy. I can't wait for that day.
I can't either. Beautifully said, Jalongo.
So having gone through these levels of Oromuma now that have been conceptualized within this theory, what level do you think most Oromos in the diaspora are at? Dun, dun, dun!
Most? I would say most are probably level one. I think there's a large portion of the diaspora, well, large is a vague term. I think there's a good amount of people that are also in level two. Like when we just think of who is being active in these different organizations, but I don't think it's the majority. And I do think that there's also a small portion that are in level three and maybe even a smaller portion in level four. For example, those that are working with groups back home on actually building institutions that are building like policies, like when you think about things like transitional government and things like that. I would say that's probably level four. Level three is like, you know, scholars that are documenting and really building that knowledge base. Level two is people who are, you know, just taking part in different types of campaigns, organizations, community work, advocacy. And then again, I think the majority of people are in level one, maybe stuck in level one.
Yeah, I agree. I think you said it. Well, I think that that's actually one of our obstacles. The majority of the Oromo diaspora is in level one. And there may be a misunderstanding that you've fully expressed your Oromuma, but with this theory, it sort of provides some clarity about how that's really a basic form of Oromuma. And we all need to ask ourselves and question ourselves and say, where are we and how can we evolve? How can we grow? You know, is there room for me to grow? And that's what I like about this theory so much. It really allows for some self-assessment, self-evaluation, and just being honest with yourself about your Oromuma. And so I do think that because the majority of the diaspora is at level one, there's a lot of potential to grow and to just, I do think there's a small minority at level two and even a smaller one at three. But I think we need more people to move up and to sort of take control of their Oromuma and to advance it. And they really can freely in the diaspora versus back home, which is a different thing, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with both of you, I think. And what do you think the situation is in Oromia? What's the level of Oromuma or the level of expression of Oromuma for the most part in Oromia, do you think?
I think it's very hard to assess. And that's first a couple of reasons. One is that, like, first we have to acknowledge that there are obstacles to developing Oromuma. And there are threats to developing institutions and systems that would allow for Oromuma to flourish. And evidence of that is like how Afan Oromo is treated historically in present day, how our history is silenced and distorted, and how the government prevents the development of our institutions, political parties, the media. Like, at every angle, Oromuma is sort of being blocked or prevented from developing. And so it leaves the Oromo people in a position in which if they develop the courage to develop the Oromuma, it puts them at a great risk. It puts them at a risk of being imprisoned, of being targeted, of being murdered. And so it kind of, you know, it kind of makes you think, if you are the diaspora, like, it's like a greater responsibility and obligation to really take advantage of the freedoms that we have to develop our Oromuma.
Yeah, and while I also don't know, I can't really estimate where the majority fall back home in Oromia in terms of what level, I would say that regardless of what level they are on, they are operating at a much higher level within that level. Because, for example, level 2, I would argue that any of the activities that diaspora folks are involved in, including us, even just simply speaking out and using our voice, am I putting my life at risk? Not in the least. But if somebody in Oromia were to do the exact same things that I do, they would be putting their life at risk. So I just, you know, even if they are at level 2, I think that the sacrifices that they are making is, it automatically goes beyond time and money and goes into that highest level of sacrifice, regardless of whether they're attending a protest to peacefully protest the state tyranny, or whether they're actually preparing for possibly dying by joining Wabo or something like that. Either way, it poses a great risk to their livelihood. Even politically organizing, if it doesn't get you killed, it will land you in jail, just like the tens of thousands of political prisoners that we have. And so it is hard to compare the level of Oromuma in the diaspora versus in Oromia
for that. That's reason. So true. I'm sorry I did not mention that, that we have 50,000, over 50,000 political prisoners who are, range from ordinary citizens to journalists to politicians, support the Oromo Federalist Congress or the Oromo Liberation Front, or are simply proud of being Oromo and are advocating for basic rights and equality for the Oromo people. Yeah, we have evidence that there is a, you know, good amount of people that have been expressing the Oromuma at high levels and have sacrificed their lives to do so. And I think that's right, John Morrow. Like, a level 2 in the United States is very different from a level 2 and in Oromia. And that's an interesting layer to add to the theory, that it depends on where you are, you know, and the sacrifices that you're paying. It's very different.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the reality is that going up the levels of Oromuma, as they're outlined here in Oromia, is a de facto crime, and it will get you arrested, killed, harassed, tortured, followed, you know. And we have to always remember that. And I think if there's anything our listeners can take away, for those of you who are in the diaspora, which is the vast majority of our listeners, you know, think of it that way. You have the freedom to move through these levels with relative ease, and the vast majority of Oromo people don't, because of the very things that we talked about here. The fact that Ethiopianism and Ethiopian colonialism is the law of the land in Oromia right now, and practicing Oromuma and, you know, building Oromuma is antithetical to that. And that's why it's so dangerous to do that in Oromia. But here, wherever you are, presuming you're outside of Ethiopia, you can do that freely. And we shouldn't take that for granted.
No, absolutely not. I entirely agree with both of you, Jalmaro and Jalello, in regards to your assessment of you know, the level of Oromuma that's being expressed in Oromia. And yeah, Jalmaro, it was really important that you articulated that added layer of complexity for people in Oromia. And, you know, as you were saying, Jalmaro, about the freedom that we have in the diaspora to move through the levels of Oromuma, I'd like to pose a rhetorical question to our listeners. And that question is, what level is your Oromuma at? Do you think it can improve? We all, as human beings, continue to learn, grow, and evolve. And we want to encourage our listeners to continue building their Oromuma, which ultimately will catalyze the formation of an independent and peaceful Oromo nation and a free and secure Oromo people. So take advantage of the freedom and the ability that you have being where you are to develop, expand, and realize your Oromuma to its fullest extent.
Can I just add, I really do encourage the listeners to actually read the article on theorizing Oromuma. And I'm sure this conversation, it clarifies the levels, but I think that there's a lot that you can learn from reading the theories that are discussed in conjunction with the Oromuma theory that's in that article. Delving into this more deeply, I think I really do encourage the listeners to do that. I think this is just sort of a distillation of what's in the article.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And I'm sure Jalmaro is about to mention that you'll be able to find a link to the article in our show notes.
That's right.
Yeah.
freeoromia.org/podcast.
Find it there, read through it. And, you know, as has been said throughout this episode, take some time to reflect on your own expression of Oromuma and how you can develop and improve it. So on that note, as usual, we always want to hear from you. You can call us and leave us a message to tell us what you think about our conversation today. Our number is +1 if you're calling from outside of the US. And then it's 430-755-0727. And of course, you can also reach us on our social media, which is at Team Free Oromia on Instagram and Twitter. So we look forward to hearing your thoughts on the idea of theorizing Oromuma, or the concept of theorizing Oromuma. And that's it for today. So thank you, as usual, for listening. And thank you to Jalello for being here with us today.
Yes, thank
you. It's been really great having you and discussing this topic with you.
Thanks so much for having me. I love this podcast, like I said, so it's an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you, as always, to you as well, Jalmaro. I don't think I say thank you to you often enough, so thank you.
Thank you, Jalmaro. And yeah, thank you so much, Dadle Lo, for joining us today. I feel like your presence really was so critical in helping us understand this topic a little bit better. And I really enjoyed your analysis and reflections on this article.
Yeah, definitely elevated our conversation. So that's really great. Hopefully we'll, I never know what to say here. See you again next week, hear you again next week. But anyway, hopefully we'll be back in our listeners' ears again next time. I hope that doesn't sound creepy.
Sounds very creepy. Don't worry, listeners. She's okay. She's cool people.
Yeah, I promise I'm not a weirdo. All right. Well, that's it. Thank you, ladies. Take care. Till next time.
Bye.
Nagati.
Nagati. Bye. Gala Tommy. Nagati.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Torbangari.
Organize successfully is successfully. Being able to organize successfully. Okay, that's it.